I want you to picture something for a second. Imagine you just bought a brand new computer. You take it out of the box, peel off that that satisfying plastic film, and you power it on.
Best feeling in the world.
Right. But here is the question. Does that computer come with the operating system, the drivers, and all the software already pre-installed?
Mm-hmm.
Or is the hard drive completely, 100% blank, and you have to somehow write the code yourself, line by line, just by interacting with the world?
Which is essentially the oldest, deepest battle in the history of philosophy. The rationalists versus the empiricists.
Exactly. Are we born with the software of knowledge, or do we have to download it? And today, we are doing a deep dive into a lecture by Dr. Arthur Holmes. He takes us back to the guy who tried to solve this problem before it even really started. We are talking about Aristotle.
And Aristotle is heavy. I mean, he is effectively the father of the scientific mindset. And this is what Dr. Holmes really drives home in the lecture, Aristotle's version of science and how we actually know anything is wildly different from how we think about it today.
So we're going to unpack Holmes's lecture on Aristotle's epistemology, which is just the fancy word for how we know what we know.
Right.
And his view on the human soul, because the mission for this deep dive is to connect two things that usually feel totally separate to us. Biology and ethics.
It does sound strange to modern ears, I think. We tend to keep science in one box and morality in another.
Yeah, completely separate.
But for Aristotle, you literally cannot understand the good life or human happiness unless you understand how your eyeball works first.
Which is wild.
It is. It's a single, continuous ladder from physical sensation all the way up to human flourishing.
So let's start at the bottom of that ladder. Holmes kicks this off by talking about how Aristotle viewed science itself. And he uses geometry as the model, which definitely brings up some high school math class memories for me.
Hopefully good memories.
Mostly sweating over proofs, but sure.
Well, this is crucial context.
Yeah.
For Aristotle, science isn't messing around with beakers and test tubes. It is a system of deduction. Think of Euclidean geometry. You start with a premise. Let's call it A.
Okay. If A is true, then B must be true. And if B is true, C follows.
So that's the classic logic chain. Like, all men are mortal. Socrates is a man. Therefore, Socrates is mortal.
Exactly. It's airtight. It feels safe. But Dr. Holmes points out a massive structural flaw in this system if you rely only on deduction.
What's the flaw? Because it seems pretty solid to me.
Well, think about it. If every proof depends on a previous proof, where does it start? You say C is true because of B. I ask, why is B true? You say, because of A. But then I ask, why is A true?
It's the toddler problem.
The toddler problem.
Yeah, you just keep asking why until the parent loses their mind.
Precisely. And in philosophy, that is a terrifying place to be. It's called infinite regress.
Infinite regress.
You are falling backward forever, never hitting solid ground. You never find a truth that stands entirely on its own.
Or, I guess, couldn't you just loop back around?
That is the second trap. Circular logic. A proves B, B proves C, and C proves A.
It's a nice closed loop. It looks pretty, but it doesn't actually tell you if any of it is true in the real world. It's just a self-consistent fantasy.
So Aristotle looks at this setup, infinite regress or circular logic, and says, we have a problem. We can't prove everything. We need a starting point that doesn't need to be proved.
He calls them first principles. These are truths that are indemonstrable.
Indemonstrable, so you can't demonstrate them.
You cannot prove them with logic, because they are the things you use to do logic. They are the bedrock.
But this is where my brain starts to itch a little bit. If we can't prove them logically, aren't we just guessing? I mean, how do we know they are true? Do we just feel it in our gut?
That is the million-dollar question. And to answer it, Aristotle invents a method called induction. Now, I have to stop you right there, because when you hear induction, you probably think of modern science, right?
Yeah, I think of inductive reasoning. You do 100 experiments, you collect data points, you put them in a spreadsheet, and you find a trend line.
That is Francis Bacon. That's the 1600s. Bacon actually wrote a book called The Novum Organum, The New Organon, specifically to trash Aristotle's old method.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Holmes is very clear here. Aristotle's induction is not about counting stats. He isn't interested in a 95% probability.
So if he isn't counting data points to find a trend, what is he doing?
He's looking for the essence of a thing. He wants to know what makes a human, or a tree, fundamentally. And the process doesn't start in the brain. It starts in the body. It starts with sensation.
Holmes gives this really specific, almost weird example in the lecture of looking at an ink marker.
It's a great example because it's so mundane. When you look at a marker, what happens physically?
Well, light bounces off it and goes into my eye.
Right. But does the matter of the marker go into your eye?
No, obviously not. That would hurt a lot.
Exactly. The physical plastic and ink stay outside. But something enters. Aristotle says the form enters.
Form.
The shape, the color, the visual pattern. Your eye becomes informed by the object. You literally take on the form of the thing you see without the matter.
Okay, so I have the visual form of the marker in my eye, but I'm not just seeing it. I might smell the ink, that distinct permanent marker smell.
Oh yeah, we all know that smell.
And I feel the smooth plastic cap in my hand, so I have these separate streams of data coming in.
And if you stop there, you don't have an object. You just have a chaotic mess. You have a patch of black, a chemical smell, and a smooth sensation. You need something to stitch it all together. Aristotle posits a faculty called the sensus communis.
Now, Holmes warns us about this term, right? Because sensus communis sounds a lot like common sense.
Right, but it has nothing to do with street smarts or looking both ways before crossing the street.
Really?
It means the common or unifying sense.
So it's like the internal mixing board.
That's a really good analogy. Or think of it as the editor in a film room. You have video tracks, audio tracks, sound effects. The sensus communis is the faculty that binds them into one synchronized clip.
Makes sense.
It allows you to perceive this is a marker, not just here are five disconnected sensations.
Okay, so the sensus communis builds a unified picture. The next step is memory. You retain that picture. But for Aristotle, memory isn't just a junk drawer where you throw random stuff. It leads to something he calls experience.
I really love this distinction in the lecture. We usually use experience to mean stuff that happened to me, like I had a crazy experience in the DMV yesterday.
Right. You won't believe the experience I just had.
Exactly. But for Aristotle, experience is a technical term. It means a unified, classified library of memories about a specific class of things.
A library.
Yes. Imagine your mind has file folders. You have a folder labeled markers. Every time you see a marker, that memory gets filed there. You have a folder for dogs, a folder for humans. Experience is when you have a full folder.
You've seen the pattern repeated enough times that you know what a dog generally is.
Yes. So you're building up this library. You've seen 1,000 markers. You've seen 1,000 humans. You have all this experience. And then comes the magic step, the leap.
Intuition.
This is where the magic happens. From that organized experience, the mind intuitively grasps the universal rule. You don't deduce it. You don't calculate it. You just see it. You grasp the essence.
Holmes uses an analogy here that I think is the highlight of the whole lecture. It's from Aristotle's text, Posterior Analytics, The Rout in Battle.
It is such a vivid image, isn't it?
It really is. Set the scene for us.
Imagine an ancient army. They are losing the battle. It is a rout. Soldiers are turning their backs, running away, screaming.
It's total panic.
Total chaos. Dust, noise, panic. There is no formation, just a mess of individuals running for their lives.
A complete disaster.
Then suddenly, one soldier stops. He turns around and stands his ground. He plants his feet.
Yeah, okay.
Then another soldier sees him. He stops running and stands next to the first guy. Then another and another.
And slowly, the chaos stops. The line reforms. The army is back.
Exactly. Order is restored from chaos. Hmm. Aristotle says that is how we learn. The chaos is the flood of sensory inputs, sights, sounds, smells, hitting us every second of every day. It's overwhelming.
And the stand.
The stand is when the mind locks onto a pattern. It finds the common thread. Oh, all these things with leaves and trunks, they're trees. And suddenly, boom, the chaos stops. You understand the concept. You have grasped the universal.
That gives me chills. It is such a beautiful description of how we move from the messy, noisy physical world to clear, abstract thought. It feels like stabilizing a shaky video feed.
And it implies something very specific about the human mind. We aren't born with these ideas preloaded, like Plato thought.
Right. Plato was the pre-installed software guy. He thought we knew everything at birth and just had to remember it. Aristotle says, no, the hard drive is empty.
But, and this is key, that the processor is there. He calls it the potential intellect. We have the capacity to know. We are born as rational beings, but only potentially. We have to actualize that potential by getting our hands dirty in the world.
Holmes calls this moderate empiricism. We aren't just passive video recorders, but we aren't born with the answers either. We have the machinery to edit the footage and find the plot.
Editing the footage to find the plot is the perfect way to frame it. The mind brings the categories, the sorting mechanism, but the world brings the content. You need both.
So we've established how we know things. We take in the world through our senses, we organize it into experience, and we intuitively grasp the truth. But then the lecture shifts gears. Holmes moves from the mind to the soul.
And we have to be careful here. When we hear soul, we tend to think of a ghost or religion or something misty that floats out of you when you die.
Right, something very spiritual.
But in Aristotle's Greek, the word is psyche. It essentially means life force.
So it's a biological term, really.
Completely. If it is alive, it has a soul. A blade of grass has a soul. A worm has a soul. And Aristotle breaks this down into a hierarchy. It is like a layer cake of existence.
Okay, walk us through the layers. What's the bottom layer?
At the bottom, you have the vegetative soul.
We're just plants.
Yes. But don't just think ferns. Think about what a plant does. What are its powers? It takes in nutrition, it grows, and it reproduces. That is the baseline of life. If you could do that, you have a vegetative soul.
Okay. Layer two.
The sensitive soul. This is animals. Now, this is important. Animals have the vegetative layer. They grow and reproduce, but they add a new layer on top. Sensation.
They can feel things.
They can feel pain and pleasure, have appetites, they want things, and they have locomotion. They can move to get what they want.
And then at the top, we have us.
The rational soul. Humans. And this is the crucial part that people often miss. We don't lose the bottom layers.
We aren't just floating brains.
Exactly. We are plants. Mm-hmm. We grow and need food. We are animals. We have desires, hormones, feelings, and we move around. But we add that unique top layer, reason. The capacity for abstract thought.
So we are basically a plant wrapped in an animal, wrapped in a philosopher.
That is literally what we are, rational animals.
Yeah.
That is the classic definition. And Holmes notes something fascinating about immortality here.
Yeah, he mentioned that Aristotle is a bit vague on the afterlife.
He is. But he suggests that if any part of us survives death, it is only the rational soul. Why? Because the vegetative and sensitive parts are tied to the hardware.
The physical body.
Right. You need a stomach to digest. You need eyes to see. If the body dies, those functions stop.
But abstract thought, thinking about the concept of justice or mathematics.
That operates in detachment from the physical body. You don't need your hands to think about the number 7. So theoretically, that part could persist.
Yeah.
But here is where we have to pivot. We have this biology. We have this soul hierarchy. Why does this matter for how I live my life on a Tuesday?
This is the payoff. This is where biology turns into ethics.
Exactly. Aristotle's ethics aren't based on a link of arbitrary rules. They're based on teleology.
Teleology, that's the idea that everything has a purpose, right?
A goal, an endpoint. The Greek word is telos. An acorn has a goal to become an oak tree. An eye has a goal to see clearly. If an eye doesn't see, it is a bad eye. It is failing at its purpose.
So naturally, the question is, what is the goal of a human being? If we are these rational animals, what is our telos?
If we are rational animals, our goal must be to function as rational animals to the highest possible degree. We need to actualize our potential. He calls this highest good the summum bonum.
Which sounds like a spell from a fantasy novel, summum bonum.
It does, doesn't it? But it just means the highest good. Holmes lists the criteria. It has to be good in itself, not just a tool to get money or power. And it has to be inclusive. It has to cover the whole life.
And Aristotle says this goal is eudaimonia. Now, everyone translates this as happiness.
And that translation is a trap. A huge trap. Because when we say, I want to be happy, what do we usually mean?
You mean we want to feel good, we want pleasure, I want a cold drink, a comfortable chair, and zero stress.
Right. Hedonism. Aristotle says, no. Remember the layer cake. Pleasure is for the sensitive soul. That is the animal part. If you just chase pleasure, you're living a successful life for a cow, not for a human.
Ouch. That is a brutal burn coming from 2,000 years ago.
It is. Eudaimonia is much better translated as flourishing. Think of a flower that is blooming perfectly or an athlete operating at peak performance. It isn't a mood. It is an activity. It is the active exercise of your rational soul. His definition of the good life is a complete life lived in accordance with reason.
A complete life. That's an important distinction Holmes makes between Aristotle and his teacher, Plato. Plato wanted to escape the world, right?
Plato was an ascetic. He thought the body was a prison. He thought the physical world was a shadowy illusion. He wanted the philosopher to detach, ignore the physical world, and contemplate pure truth. It leads to monks living in caves, separating themselves from society.
But Aristotle says, no, look at the biology.
Exactly. We are rational animals. We have bodies. We live in cities. We have friends. You can't just float away. The goal is a holistic life. You participate in politics. You run a business. You raise a family. But you organize all of that using reason.
That feels so much more grounded. It's not about retreating to a mountaintop. It's about being better at being human right where you are.
It is. It's about taking the raw material of your life, mm-hmm. your desires, your ambitions, your relationships, and organizing them. Just like the sensus communis organizes raw sensation into a picture, and just like the mind organizes experience into truth, you organize your life into a coherent, rational whole.
So let's bring it all back together. It really is a single system.
It is. Epistemology, how we know, leads directly to ethics, how we should live. We start by sensing the world. We organize those senses into experience. We use intuition to grasp the truth. And then we use that truth to guide our actions toward eudaimonia.
Now, before we wrap up, Holmes leaves us with a bit of a cliffhanger, a provocative thought about certainty that I think is really relevant to us now.
He does. It's the smarter Aleck problem.
The smarter Aleck. I love that phrasing. What does he mean by that?
Think about it. Aristotle's system relies on having enough experience to intuitively grasp the truth. You see 1,000 swans, they're all white, so you intuit the universal truth. All swans are white. You are certain.
And you feel great about that truth. You write it in a textbook. Until you take a vacation to Australia.
And you see a black swan. Boom! Your universal truth just collapsed. Your intuition was wrong because your experience wasn't complete.
So Holmes is asking, can we ever be truly certain? Or is there always a smarter Aleck around the corner with a counterexample we haven't seen yet?
And this is really the birth of the modern struggle with knowledge. We have largely moved away from the Greek ideal of absolute, unshakable certainty. Today, we often settle for justified belief or probability. We can't be 100% sure, but we have enough evidence to be rational.
Which is a little less comforting than Aristotle's first principles, but maybe more realistic for us.
Perhaps. But Aristotle would argue that without that drive for the absolute, without that confidence that the world makes sense and we can understand it, science and ethics would both fall apart.
Okay.
If we start trying to find the form, we're just left with the chaos of the route.
So here is our challenge to you listening today. Look at your day. Not just the big stuff, but the clutter. The emails, the commute, the noise, the scrolling on your phone. Don't just look at it as chaos.
Right. Think of it like the route in battle.
Yeah.
It is raw material. Your mind is the soldier that needs to stand firm and create order. You are building experience. And the question is, are you just letting it pile up? Or are you looking for the pattern?
Are you editing the footage to find the plot of your own flourishing?
That is the question.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Always a pleasure.
We will see you on the next one.